Hey, it's Scott Petrak with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns wasted a wonderful chance to improve to 5-2, but blew a late lead in a 24-20 loss in Seattle. But they're still 4-3 and could be poised to get Deshaun Watson back Sunday versus the Arizona Cardinals. Here to discuss everything, including a slow trade deadline, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. What's going on, Chud?
Hey, Scott, welcome back from Seattle. Hope you enjoyed your trip. You weren't able to bring back a win, though, so we got to hold that against you.
Yeah, well, I think you can blame a late defense and a P.J. Walker, three P.J. Walker turnovers.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Well, we'll get into all that, but we're taping it later this week. This is Thursday morning we're taping this, and part of the reason we waited was to get through the trade deadline. And also, too, with the Watson, just have a little more understanding of where he stands. So get a little bit more information out there before this Sunday's game. But before we look back at last Sunday, trade deadline comes and goes. They do not trade for a quarterback. They do make a, I don't know if you'd call it a minor trade. I don't know. Where would you put it at? Where would you put the trade they made? And are you surprised they didn't make a trade for a quarterback?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think if you're Detroit, it's a somewhat significant trade, right? You're picking up a receiver that's a starter in this league, in Donovan Peoples-Jones. Had 61 catches last year, over more than 800 yards. If you're the Browns, it doesn't feel that as big to me because he hasn't done much this year. He only had 8 catches, 97 yards, no touchdowns. And the reason for the trade is to clear playing time for the rookie, Cedric Tillman. I understand it. The Browns got a 6th-round pick back in 2025. DPJ was going to be a free agent after the season. The Browns weren't going to re-sign him. So I understand it. Now, from a Browns perspective, it only works. It only is a good trade if Tillman comes in and is productive. Right? Because you knew what Donovan Peoples-Jones brought. He was reliable, made contested catches, has really good hands, could catch the ball on punts. He wasn't electric in the punt return game, but he could catch it most of the time. So you need Tillman, if you're the Browns, to come in and have an impact and not make rookie mistakes, not make mental mistakes, because DPJ did not make those. So I understand why the Browns did it. You have to give it time to judge it for the rest of this season. It made sense long term because he was going to be gone. I think it's certainly worth discussing. I don't know if I'd call it a major trade. And then from the quarterback perspective, I'm not surprised, Chud, that they didn't make a move, because I think the feeling all along within the organization is that Deshaun Watson's going to be back sooner rather than later. And we'll get into it, but that sooner could be Sunday against the Cardinals. So if you think your franchise quarterback is going to be bad, and you think that he's going to play the rest of the season, because that's the hope and the plan and the dream is when your quarterback plays, he stays healthy, and that's across the whole league, then I don't know if you think as an organization it's worth trading what reportedly would have had to be a 3rd-round pick to go get Jacoby Brissett. So I understand it. I also, and I would love your opinion, I get the people that say, hey, you don't know if Deshaun Watson's, in fact, going to be back when, right? And even if he comes back, he could get hurt again. So getting Jacoby Brissett would be insurance at the game's most important position. So I understand that thinking completely. I'm just trying to explain why the Browns didn't do it and why I didn't think they would do it.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question for you. was even if he does come back this Sunday, it doesn't mean that he's going to be 100% or that he won't get hurt down the line and, should have they gotten more protection for him. But, I have to be honest, Scott. I mean, I think, and I know the headlines, the radio talk shows, sports segments on the news, us talking about it, I understand that is the top story, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I think we're missing out on the big picture that if Deshaun Watson, we don't get him back, I think we're in trouble regardless. Like, I know it's tough to watch P.J. Walker, but, like, I don't if anyone they traded for would have come in and saved the day. Does that make sense? Might have been easier to watch. It would have given you maybe a better chance. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, Chud. And I think you are thinking like the Browns are. And it goes into the decision at the beginning of the year. And I'm not saying this is the right decision, because there's plenty of people. There's plenty of people that think, hey, you got, it's the most important position in sports. Spend as much money as necessary, right? So if you have Deshaun Watson, go get the best backup quarterback and pay him $8 million a year, because what if Deshaun Watson gets hurt and misses 4, 6, 8 games, right? And I understand that. I also know that if you're the organization, that money is not infinite, right? There's a finite budget you have and a finite salary cap that you work with. There's also cash issues. But beyond that, it's, I think there's a general thought, and I think it permeates much of the league, that if you're starting, if your franchise quarterback gets hurt, you're done, right? Like, that's just, you're built around this guy. You're built for your franchise quarterback to win you a bunch of games. When you get to the playoffs, you're playing guys like Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, and whoever that backup is, right? Whether it's Jacoby Brissett or Case Keenum or whoever you think is the best backup in the league, Andy Dalton, whoever that is, it's not going to matter because you don't have your franchise quarterback. And I just think that's the thought. I think all of that combines to trading Joshua Dobbs before the season, going with the rookie and Dorian Thompson-Robinson to be your backup, not trading for Jacoby Brissett at the trade deadline. I think all those things are a result of, hey, if we don't have our guy, we're pretty much sunk. And I don't know if that's the right thinking. I just think that that is the thinking. And, you know, if they traded for Brissett, like, I think he gives them a better chance than P.J. Walker to beat Seattle, to beat Arizona, to beat whoever they're playing. And we saw it last year. He was good. If he had a better defense, they would have won more games last year. But I do think there is I think there is some sense to the idea that if you got to the playoffs with Jacoby Brissett, that it's a bad matchup. And I'm not saying you should just throw in the towel. So, like, I'm just saying that that's the thinking, I believe, from the Browns and a lot of teams across the league. Is if you don't have your franchise quarterback, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That really is, and I'm sure there's thought to that. Now, you can say most of the NFL, but not the Vikings, right? I mean, they lose Kirk Cousins and they go out and they get Dobbs.
Right, but they didn't have Dobbs before they lost Kirk Cousins, right? Like, if the Browns knew Deshaun Watson was going to be out the rest of the year, I think they would have made a trade for Jacoby Brissett, right? Because
so there you go.
It gives them a chance to get to the playoffs. Right.
So there's the answer to the question right there.
Yeah, yeah.
They believe Watson's going to be fine. And if they didn't, they would have gone and made a trade.
Correct. I completely believe that, John. And so then I think that argument works on both sides. Right. So from the Browns perspective, it's OK, our quarterback's coming back and we're not going to spend a third round pick on a guy that we hope never plays. On the other side is, well, if you think Jacoby Brissett's important enough to get if Watson were hurt, then why isn't he important enough to get in case he might get hurt, right? And obviously you would think the chances of Watson getting hurt are greater given the fact that he didn't make it through his last game, right? Given the fact that he's still dealing with the shoulder, blah, blah, blah. So I think it works on both sides, but I think that is the bottom line, Chud.
Yeah, and I gave him credit last week for making the move at quarterback and trading their kicker. But I will say at the end of the day, I think, and we talked about this about a month ago or whatever, I would have found a way to keep all three quarterbacks at the beginning of the year. That, to me, would have been the answer.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, it does now. We talked about it. I thought twice about it. I didn't think a third time about it when they traded Dobbs. I was like, that's fine. But you'd rather have Joshua Dobbs right now than PJ Walker or DTR. I think there's no doubt about that. If you have Dobbs, do you beat Seattle? Probably, right? I don't know if they beat Baltimore on October 1st. Maybe they do. They certainly would have had a better chance than they did with DTR. I think it's a one-win difference. Maybe it's a two-win difference, you know, and that's big when you're trying to, you know, get to the playoffs and win the AFC North.
All right, let's go to Watson then. He practiced yesterday. You saw him up close. How did he look? Is he going to play Sunday?
Yeah, we first of all, I mean, we're taping this Thursday morning before I get to Berea. So we could have resolution today. Although Kevin Stefanski doesn't talk today, so we probably don't get a Kevin Stefanski. Yes, Deshaun Watson's my guy. They probably drag it out till Friday at least, right? But I think we'll talk to Deshaun Watson. We don't know that yet. Maybe they give him another day. Maybe he talks Friday. Who knows? So my point is, Watson could come out today and say, yeah, I'm good to go. I'm going to start. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But I'll tell you what, watching him gave me every indication he's going to start. And the fact that Kevin Stefanski did not announce a starter on Wednesday, which he did the week before, leaves the door open for Watson. The fact that he was the first guy up in all the drills and then would double and triple up on some of the reps, right? Like, it looked like DTR would want to go in, and Watson said, no, I got this next one. That's a guy that looks like he's getting ready to start. I mean, I don't think there's any two ways. I don't think there's another way to look at how Wednesday's practice was in the 20 minutes that the media got to watch. Is he's trying to get ready or is ready to start. And then you go to maybe what's more important is how did he throw it? And I thought he threw it better than at any time since the injury. And people might say that's not a high bar, and I understand that. I did think the Friday before the Colts game, I thought he threw well enough to play. Obviously, he did too, and the Browns did because he started against the Colts. I thought he threw it better yesterday, Wednesday, than he did that Friday before the Colts game. And I think that's a really good sign for him, for his availability, okay, right, for the team. And just real quick, you go back to that week before the Colts game. He hadn't practiced in a couple of weeks. He shows up, he practices that Thursday, doesn't practice Wednesday, practices Thursday, throws it, a lot of low balls, you know, not a ton of zip, more zip than he'd had before that Ravens game, but not the normal zip. And you thought, okay, if he throws like this, he probably isn't starting, but then you assume there's going to be an upgrade. Friday threw it better. Now we're so flash, you know, fast forward, Wednesday of this week, he was already throwing it better than he did that Friday of the Colts week. And I think that's a positive sign.
It's good to hear. All right. So if he's able to play, obviously they're going to start him. If he does not play and we find out that he won't, then who will start?
Yeah. Kevin Stefanski said it's going to be PJ Walker. And I believe him. And I understand why that would be. But I'm going to give you a but. DTR was second up in those drills that we watched in practice yesterday. In the 20 minutes, it's individual, it's quarterback drills, and it's individual drills thrown to receivers and tight ends. I don't know if that's significant. It doesn't always have to be. They're all, you know, PJ Walker was next up. So it was, you know, Watson, DTR, Walker. I just felt like it just seemed weird to me that we just heard Stefanski say Walker's my guy, is number two, and would start if Watson doesn't. And then DTR was up second in the rotation. I just think that's worth noting, but I'm going to take Stefanski obviously at his word, and he said it would be Walker.
Okay. Where are we at injury-wise with the rest of the team right now?
Yeah, we got some question marks. You know, Jerome Ford says he's fine coming off that high ankle, which he didn't miss a game, which is amazing. And he said it was a high ankle. I asked him, and he looked pretty good against Seattle. So, I don't know, quick healer, whatever, but that's good for him, good for the team. Dedrick Wills didn't practice Wednesday with the foot ankle, but he played through it against the Seahawks. I think he's going to be fine. I think the two guys to keep an eye on, Chud, are Greg Newsome, the second, your corner, the starting corner, has a groin injury, left the Seahawks game, didn't practice Wednesday, and then rookie right tackle DeJuan Jones, who's done a really nice job filling in for Jack Conklin, he left the Seahawks game with a shoulder injury. He played a couple snaps after he left, but that was only because the Browns went with the jumbo package. Then he went back to the bench. I asked Stefanski on Wednesday, I said, are you worried about long-term injury to either of those guys? And he said, we'll see. Let's see how the next couple of days go. So, you know, he left the door open for, you know, long-term, which to me means IR, which means you miss four games. So I think we got to keep an eye on that because you could be without a couple of key guys.
All right. You ready to go back to last Sunday?
Yeah. You want to talk third and three?
Oh, we're going to talk about that, no doubt. But I want to give my overall thought, though, okay,
yeah,
to the fact that, number one, I almost, what do you call it, a noser?
Noser.
I almost had a noser. I don't know if you know that. I had 23-20 Seattle.
So you got a nostril then.
Oh, is that, yeah, okay.
You got one of those, yeah.
So I was 1 point off from hitting right on. 24-20 was the final. I had 23-20. So I pretty much went in with low expectations. Now, as a fan, and I want to separate this here, as the fan in me and someone that would have liked to have seen them steal a game and knowing they should have stolen it and they could have stolen it, yeah, I'm pissed. I mean, no question. Are we allowed to say pissed on the podcast?
Yeah, sure, why not?
All right. So, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I understand where fans are upset, but if I pull back, and this is how I felt when I was kind of watching the game, I already thought they were going to lose going into it. Then they were down 14-0. I honestly was like, this game's over. They're not coming back. Scott, I was actually impressed that they fought and came back. I didn't think they had it in them to do that. So to me, it kind of showed a little bit more. And I actually feel it's not a W, but I actually walked away thinking, man, you know, this team, they have some fight in them. They almost came back to win. They should have come back to win. And, you know, at the end of the day, they should win this Sunday. I think we all would have signed up for 5-3. So, like, in the big picture, I am not freaking out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's a good, I think it's a good take. I think it's a little glass half full, which I appreciate. And you know, when you talk about, you know, I don't want to give them the win against the Cardinals, but when you even 4-3, right? To say they're 4-3, with Watson missing pretty much four games, there's something to be said for that. I think it's impressive. I think it is a credit to Kevin Stefanski. I think it is a credit to the resilience that you mentioned and was obvious in on display multiple times against the Seahawks. It's a tough place to play, Chud. It's loud. You get down 14-0. You're number one ranked defense. Can't stop them. And to bounce back with PJ Walker, and you got to throw the ball a little bit, right? Because you're down 14-0. I do think that speaks well to the team. I don't know if I was surprised by that. You always think, man, this game could get away, right? But I think I've seen this resilience in the fight that you mentioned in this team through the first seven games now. So I wasn't stunned by that. I was impressed by it. And I'm kind of working on a story about that. Where does that come from? The closeness of the team. I think all your points are right on. But when they're winning with 2:04 left, you think, oh, I start thinking this team can be as close to being 5-2, right? Which feels different than 4-3. And Myles Garrett said that right after the game. Boss, all of a sudden at 5-2, you start thinking, okay, I mean, there's only three teams in the conference, I think, that only have two losses, right? You're only a half game behind Baltimore then. You're in the Kansas City losers, right? Like, all of a sudden, the discussion feels different to me at 5-2, and they had such a good chance. So I don't think that erases anything you said. I just think it's kind of like this added layer because of how the game ended.
Yeah, no doubt. I will not disagree with that. It would be amazing if they could have gotten the win. So going back to what you just said, though, I don't think my being impressed or whatever was that I didn't know they had it in them as much. Is that just the way the NFL works? Look at the Lions. Look how great the Lions are this year. They went to the Ravens and they got their butts kicked. I mean, like, just you have those off weeks. Look at Denver gave up 70 points to Miami, and then they somehow beat Kansas City. I'm just saying, when it was 14-0, I'm like, all right, 4 o'clock game in Seattle. You know, the defense looks terrible. They got, well, like, I guess that was more of my, I'm like, hey, this is going to be that stinker game.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go to the third down, 3rd and 3. Obviously, been talked a lot this week. If you're listening right now, there's nothing we're going to tell you that's new or maybe you haven't heard, but obviously, I just want your take on it. A lot of people wish they would have run the ball there, or maybe a different kind of pass. There's so many different takes on it. If you don't get it, basically, if it's an incomplete pass, then you could still punt. I've heard it all, man. I've heard it all this week. What do you think?
Okay, I'm going to try to keep this relatively brief. I figured they would throw the ball. That's Kevin Stefanski's nature, right? He's an aggressive coach. I think that is the right way to coach in general, is to be aggressive. I think we see that across the league. By being at 204 with the 2-minute warning, throwing the ball does not cost you any clock, right? Any time, any seconds. The clock's going to stop at the 2-minute warning, so that's a perfect time to throw the ball. It feels like Seattle is preparing for the run, right? Which makes it the better time to throw the ball. It's hard to convert 3rd and 3 running the ball. It just is. I think if you look across the whole league, it's hard to do that. The Browns tried it on the first series, and they tried to run it. I think it was 3rd and 3. It was 3rd and something like that. And Jerome Ford gets stopped. They try to run a sweep. He gets stopped. It's hard to do it. It's easier to convert 3rd and 3 throwing the ball. And I think Stefanski took all that into account. I get the P.J. Walker factor. And I understand completely the people that say, hey, P.J. Walker's your quarterback. He's a turnover machine. Hand the ball off. Let your defense go play. I understand that. I personally don't have an issue with throwing the ball there. I have an issue with throwing an interception. And I put right? And I put a lot of that on the quarterback. Like, I get that the buck stops with Kevin Stefanski. Like, we talked about that 100 times on this thing, Chud. I get that. I also know that you can only do so much as a coach. And at some point, it was 3rd and 2 when the Browns tried to run it on their first drive. Like, at some point, you got to trust your guys. And maybe that's wrong, and I'll listen to that argument. But you see, like, I came home from Seattle. I rewatched the game, right? And I'm watching the TV copy because obviously I don't see all that when I'm in the press box. And you can see during that timeout before the play, Stefanski, like, it's almost like I'm not reading his lips, but you can tell by the way the discussion's going is, hey, you can't throw an interception here, right? Like that's the message. And Walker's like, I got it. You know, we're better off taking a sack. We're better off me running. Like, right? Don't throw an interception. Well, so if you drill that guy in the message in your quarterback's head, you want to be able to trust him, right? Like, you have the right messaging. Now, you know, I don't know what the perfect move there is for Walker, right? He's got the blitzer coming right at him. So if he doesn't think he can get the ball past him, which obviously he didn't because Adams jumps and the ball, you know, he heads it to the middle of the field, then keep the ball, run it, or wait that extra beat and Jerome Ford's coming wide open over the middle is a check down, right? And I think he would have had time to do that. Now, David Njoku's open in the flat on the left. I don't know. I think the play would have to be a complete broken down play for him to get to Njoku because it's a quick, he gets it, he hitches. It's a quick slant for Amari Cooper, right? Like, there's not a whole lot of time there to make a bunch of reads. But if you do have the blitzer coming in your face, I don't know if it's unreasonable to expect your quarterback to go, hey, I can't make this throw. I'm going to check it down over the middle. Or I'm going to keep it and we're going to punt, right? So I put a lot of it on P.J. Walker. Now, maybe part of that's bad break, right? The ball hits the guy in the helmet, you know. But I personally absolve Kevin Stefanski from some of that blame. I just do. And I also want to point this out. They ran the same play or a real similar play on 3rd and 11 at the goal line in the third quarter before they kicked one of those field goals. And he completes a pass to Amari Cooper for like 8 yards. Cooper runs it a little deeper, right? On the 3rd and 3, he runs about a 4.5, 5 yard in. On 3rd and 11, he runs an 8 yard slant and he completes it. So they've seen this look before, like they run this play. They've seen what the defense does or defense didn't blitz on the other one. My point is you see it. Like, they've run this play. They've had some success. The quarterback knows what to do. I understand why Stefanski did it. He's trying to be aggressive. One first down all but wins the game. Punting doesn't necessarily win the game. The defense, as we see, gave up a 53-yard drive, right? I think it was 53, 57, whatever it was at the last drive there. They gave it up to win it. So what's to say they couldn't have gotten up an 80-yard drive, right?
We'll get to that.
Right. So I get all the frustration. I get that it would have been simpler to run the ball. I do think Browns fans are kind of risk averse. And I think that's an interesting thing. I think it's like a psychological study to do because so many people just want them to run the ball and punt. And I don't know if that's the way to win most often in the league these days. But anyway, so well, I probably didn't keep that short, Judd, but those are my quick thoughts.
Well, I think run the ball and then punt, but, you know, also, I know they, like you had mentioned the odds or whatever, but if you do run the ball, you also have a chance of getting a first down there, and then you could basically end the game. I mean, and you're taking the ball out of the hands of the quarterback that, which game was it, Colts or 49ers? He almost threw an interception in the end zone, remember?
Yeah, it was the 49ers game. I mean, he's got six turnovers, so, yeah. I get it.
So I understand being a great – and listen, I am not disagreeing with everything you just said. I think all your points are valid, and I might actually agree with you. But I need to bring up the opposite point just so everyone can, you know, hear different versions or have different analysis. Because, like, listen, if that's Joe Montana or, you know, a Hall of Fame quarterback or even Deshaun Watson or, you know, whatever,
yeah,
then I could say your argument is almost like you can't penetrate it. Right, but I can penetrate your argument a little bit in the fact of, you know, this Stefanski knows what he's dealing with here. He's dealing with a quarterback that continues to turn the ball over. And that's exactly what happened. So even though he can say, don't turn the ball over, you can't turn the ball over, doesn't mean it's not going to happen. So, and look, it happened. So that's all I'm saying. Yeah. You know, you got to remember who you're dealing with here. So that's the other way of looking at it, right?
Oh, there's no doubt. And like, I think that's a completely legitimate argument. And it looks a lot better when they're – when not, you know, not better from a Browns perspective, but the argument seems almost unimpeachable when it's viewed after the interception, right? Like, well, of course you should run the ball there, right? And I know plenty of people said that beforehand. I'm just trying to explain why I understand why Stefanski did it. And
sure.
And I don't necessarily fault him for trying to throw the ball there. I completely understand that. And obviously it backfired. But I tend to put a lot of that on the quarterback. And yeah, maybe that's I can kind of relate to the coaching decision there, I guess is my point.
Yeah, no, he tried to win the game, and I'm going to completely agree as we transition to the defense now. Even if they don't get it and they don't throw the interception and they punt, the way the defense, they could have easily gone, like you said, 80, 90, 70. Yeah. So they could have gone how many ever yards. So there's no guarantee. The only guarantee to win would have been just to get the first down. And then, you know, could have they run the clock out at that point? They would have the 2-minute warning.
It would have been close. It wouldn't have been completely because Seattle had a couple timeouts left. So I think if, let's say they go 3 and out, they punt with 40 seconds left, right? I mean, it changes the dynamic completely. It's not the game's not over with the first down, but if you get a first down, then you run it 3 times. Like, I don't think there's any question about that. You know, and again, like you talk about hindsight, if Walker completes that pass, right, and Cooper isn't like wide open, but let's say Adams doesn't deflect it. Like, I think Cooper has won that route. I think the throw gets there before the safety. There's a chance for first down, and like a good chance for first down. Or if Walker thinks better of it and dumps it to Ford, they get the first down. Obviously, we're not having this discussion because it doesn't go sideways in haywire. But I don't even know if there's a big discussion about it. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think it's one of those calls where you're like, oh my God, this call is so bad. Like when Brandon Staley with the Chargers, when he goes for it on 4th and 1 from his own 9, from his 19, right? Like that's a call that you can question even if it works. This one, I don't think you question if it works, but when it blows up, then it's a huge question. At least that's how I view it.
Yeah. It just seems, though, Scott, that when they lose, Stefanski's going to be – I mean, it's brutal. When they lose, people want him fired. He takes so much heat. When he wins, you don't hear it as much. It just seems to be where we're at with this guy right now.
I'm so glad you brought that up. And I think we just discussed this. He's become he's become such a popular punching bag. And I don't quite understand it. I get that he's a coach. I get that he's a play caller, right? And so he's obviously – front facing or whatever that word term I'm looking for. So he's going to get a ton of the criticism. He called an unbelievable game, Judd. You talk about bouncing back from 14-0. Kevin Stefanski deserves a bunch of credit for that. Those screen plays that he called took advantage of the Seattle's aggression on defense, worked wonderfully, got him back in the game, got him the lead. Like, I thought, right, probably until that third and three call, which we just talked about, masterful job. And people ignore that because of one call. And it's this thing and where once somebody's become, like, the object of your criticism, not your, Jen or you, right? Whether it's Kevin Stefanski, Jed Wills, whoever it is, it doesn't matter what they do, they get criticized, right? I'm still hearing people criticize Jed Wills. He's had three good games in a row, right? Kevin Stefanski's got a team with P.J. Walker quarterbacking, 4-3. He went 2-1 with P.J. Walker's quarterback. Like, that deserves credit, and he's just not getting it. And I almost think that in today's society or whatever, it doesn't matter who the coach is. Like, if Sean Payton were here with his resume, I bet people in Denver are killing Sean Payton before he beat the Chiefs, right? So that's just the way it is. And I think it's probably just better for, especially if you're Jimmy Haslam, is not to listen to that criticism, because I don't know if anybody you have in that role would go unscathed. And I want one more quick point. We talk about Stefanski calling a good game. I don't know if you picked up on this on TV or not, Judd. I did when I rewatched it. When they wind up kicking, I think it's the second field goal they kick. It's third down. P.J. Walker tries to throw one-on-one to Cooper on the sideline. It's good coverage. It's an incompletion. Elijah Moore is wide open, running a shallow cross. When he doesn't get the ball, right, it goes to Cooper. Elijah Moore looks at the sideline like, why didn't I get the ball? Like, it was obvious that the play was supposed to go to Moore. And then as soon as it happens, Walker looks at the sideline and pats his chest like, I screwed that up. It's on me. Well, that's like, it's a touchdown. So that's four more points that Stefanski would have had, and we're having a different discussion at 3rd and 3, right? Like, so there's so much isn't in the coach's hands that I think you got to cut him some slack sometimes.
So the bottom line is, before we move on here, P.J. Walker, give him credit. He's been thrown in a tough spot, but ultimately, I mean, at the end of the day, he cost them a game.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Now, you know, like, you could, if you want to give him credit for winning the Niners game, you can. If you want to give him credit for winning the Colts game, you can. But he made costly mistakes that cost them, that kept them from winning that Seattle game. I mean, he had three turnovers and I thought missed other opportunities.
Yeah. All right, Scott, we got about 5 minutes left and we want to get to the Arizona game, make predictions. But before we do, the defense, I mean, you know where I stood on the defense. I hated the fact that everyone crowned them as elite in championship, and I tried to pump the brakes on it, and I fell for it. I'm like, all right, they are. Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're not. Not championship. They're very good. They have to be, but they're just not yet.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, they're still leading the league in yards. They still got a lot of talent. But there's some issues there. They're giving up too many big plays. More concerning is the late drives they've given up. They could have lost to San Francisco. They could, and they did lose to Seattle, right? You got to get a big stop. Martin Emerson Jr., the corner, said it after the game. If we want to be the best defense in the league, we can't give up those kind of drives. And that's the bottom line. And not as disturbing, because it's the last drive of the game. They got to figure it out at the start of the game. It's three straight games they've given up an opening touchdown. They give up two in a row against Seattle. They got to figure some stuff out. And I have confidence in Schwartz that he will. Jim Schwartz, the coordinator. I think all the talent's there. But they got to solve some problems that they got going.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's move on to the Arizona game. Rookie Clayton Tune, is he going to get the start?
It looks like it. Now, there have been a little cagey in Arizona. You got Kyler Murray. He's still on PUP, but he's practicing fully. NFL Network says it's going to be Tune, unless barring anything unforeseen. I don't know if they just want to give Murray another week, if they want to see the rookie before they go to Murray, because I do think there's some questions about Murray's long-term future there. So maybe they want to get a look at this rookie. Obviously, if you're the Browns, you'd much prefer to see Clayton Tune, right? Guy's thrown one pass in the league, and it was on a fake punt, and he threw it short of the first down marker, and they wound up punt, or they wound up turning the ball over on downs. It's the only play he's been in the league. Murray, former number one pick, all that. So now Tune, you know, he's got a big arm. He can run around a little bit. He's rookie fifth round pick from Houston, but the Browns would rather face him. If it's Kyler Murray, that changes the dynamic.
It's pretty amazing in Cleveland sports history. We always have these stories, but we avoid the, hey, we traded the quarterback to you and he comes back and beats you. So we at least don't have to stress out about that.
Correct. And for a second there, some people thought the Browns might go trade for Joshua Dobbs. He winds up going to Minnesota, like you talked about, because of the Kirk Cousins injury. It would have been awful. The Browns, not awful, like from a bad perspective. It would have been something to see Andrew Berry admit the mistake of trading Joshua Dobbs and then go get him again, right? Like, okay, we're gonna go trade. You're gonna go trade for him when Watson comes back, but you didn't have him for the four games Watson missed.
I thought about
that. Yeah, right. That would have been a tough one from my PR's perspective.
Yeah. So Arizona, you know, they don't have Connor right now at running back. He's been on the IR. Obviously, you just talked about the quarterbacks there. So last I looked, I saw the line yesterday. I saw 7.5. Today I see 8, Browns favored. And do you see the over-under, 37.5? Mm. I mean, these over-unders in the NFL, a lot of low-scoring games. Like tonight's game, Tennessee-Pittsburgh's is low. A lot of – if you keep an eye on gambling, a lot of unders are hitting this year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, right? And I think that's – you know, you wonder sometimes the NFL has like overcorrection where that happens, and then all of a sudden you see a bunch of offensive rules, right? Maybe they all of a sudden they start calling more pass interference or whatever to help the scoring bump up. But it has, like, defenses have caught up for whatever reason a little bit. A quick aside, talk about over under. I think the over under on Northwestern Iowa this weekend at Wrigley Field is like 25.5. It's the lowest. My. It's the lowest over under in the history of college football.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's at least under 30. I don't know if it's 25.5 or 28.5. But yeah, it's crazy low. But yeah, you're right. You're right about the over-under. So.
All right, let's get to predictions. We both had Seattle last week. That moves me to 5-3. And are you 4-4 then?
Yeah, I had that one last. I said 2017 Seattle. So yeah, I got that right.
Yeah, you got it right. So 5-3, 4-4. All right, so we're both right there. Let's keep it going here. I'll go first. I think you went first last week. I'm going to keep it short and sweet. This is just one of those games, Scott, you have to win. I mean, there's no excuses here, especially if Deshaun Watson starts. But even if he doesn't, they need to win this game. When you're an 8-point favorite at home, it's just there's no excuse. If they lose this game, it will be an ugly week in Cleveland. It will be a tough podcast to do next week. So, this is one of those where I feel pretty comfortable about it. And if I'm wrong, boy, oh boy, that's not going to be good. So I'm going to go Browns and I'm going to go 23-13.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with what you said. I'm going to assume Deshaun Watson plays. I think they win either way, but it should be easier if Watson plays. I think the Browns will get a boost if Watson plays and is able to stay in and perform halfway decent, has to protect the ball. That's the key for whoever's quarterbacking. But I think it's important for Watson to get back this week. So you're not, his first time back isn't against in Baltimore, right? Next week, division leader, right? That's a tough one. I think it's important for him to get out there, get his feet wet, complete some passes, prove that he can take a hit. So I think it's a big game from that perspective. I think the Browns are better than Arizona. Arizona, you mentioned, has some injuries. They're in a rebuild. So I got Browns. I'm going to go 24-16. I thought about 24-13, but I'm going to go
24-16. All right. We're on the same page. So you got it right.
Right on the thing. Yeah, I know. I didn't do that on purpose, but
right.
But I was really like, man, 13, the Browns defense is struggling a little bit. I think they'll bounce back, but I'm not ready for them to bounce back completely. That's why I gave it 16.
Yeah. Well, I didn't look at the over-under when I did my score. And a lot of times I will look at that. It comes out to 36. And right now the over-under is 37.5. So, I mean, it's right there. So
yeah. Hey, Judd, before we go, we ran out of time last week. I got to get back to that trivia thing.
Right,
real quick. The question, the first one was in 2013, the top Browns rusher had 377 yards. Any idea who that is?
No, and I didn't look it up. I don't.
Okay, my answer was Eric Rett, and I don't even know when Eric Rett was here, but I know he was at some point. I think it was probably about a decade earlier than 2013, but that just popped in my head. It winds up being Willis McGahee. Remember when Willis McGahee was here for 1 year, and that was it, and he became the starter when Joe Banner traded Trent Richardson. Was it after week one or week two?
I've suppressed that in my mind. Yeah. So that's why. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the year they traded Trent Richardson. So it kind of messed up the whole running back room. All right. So here's a new one. This is coming from Zach on Twitter. Who was second on the Browns in sacks in 2022? This was only a year ago. He had 2.5. So Miles had 16. Who was second on the team with 2.5 sacks? Think about it, and we'll answer that next week.
All right. There you go.
All right, we're good to go here, Chad?
Yep, good to go.
I'm going to go talk to some Browns players in the locker room. Deshaun Watson, we'll talk. I don't know if that means he's starting or not. He said don't read anything into it last week when he talked, because obviously he didn't even play last week. But we'll get his update on his arm. So looking forward to that today. So
hey,
thank you.
Real quick, hope you had a good Halloween. It's one of my favorite holidays. And did you see the skit we did?
I did. The Kelsey's or the Kelsey Swift? Yes.
Well, there was that. And then I did that with Holly Strano. Yeah, yeah. And then the skit I did with Austin Love, where I was 10, Austin.
I did see that.
Wayne's World, Ken, yes. And Mario Luigi.
Yes, I saw that, Chuck.
Yeah.
I love the Halloween spirit. It's not my favorite holiday, but I appreciate everybody who gets into it.
Yeah. Well, if anyone's listening and wants to go find it on social media. It's a good laugh.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. Cool. I'm glad you mentioned that. All right. I'm going to go talk to some Browns players. Thank you, as always, Chud. Thank you for listening, everybody. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.